Blog Talk Radio.
We're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
Thank you.
Show number 1,300 and 500. I gotta look. I'm sorry, y'all. I have to look. It's a pain in the butt when I have to do that, but yes, I have to look. So I will get back to you and confirm the number sometime soon. Anyway, having said that, welcome, welcome, welcome. As we get ready to put in another edition of the Stir Fry, courtesy of loving mad scientist here.
And Soul Tree Radio.
In a raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to have you in the house. Soul Tree Radio in a raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassin of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all, I mean get all the good shit. The who, what, when, where, why, and how right now at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, Radio Reggie somewhere in Virginia, the Orlando Ledbetter and Sonic Cheryl Jones in Philadelphia, Ricky Hampton Sr. in Detroit, Mike Robeson out in Oakland by the East Bay, and our man Pat Freeman, the mighty Obar, doing his work with the Minor Football League and also really doing well with his first book, The Art of the Interview. We hope to have Obar on soon to discuss just that very thing. And when the chefs come in, they will come in. But as of right now, I am under the influence of drugs.
Yes.
No, they shot me in the ass. And that's a long story, but the bottom line is I had to get one. So I got the one that I thought was the safest one based on what research I did. If I did not have to go anywhere, I would not have taken it. But I digress, and I want to open things up with something I picked up on social media. Now, you know, that's not always a good thing, but this one inspired a little bit of thought. Now, this was a meme. Juxtapose, we have Sue Bird and LeBron James. Now, they're both great basketball players. Sue, a mainstay of the WNBA, 17 seasons in. LeBron James, a mainstay of sports, period, because he is the cash cow. 17 seasons in the NBA. Sue and LeBron both have 4 league championships. Last season, Sue Bird made $215,000. Last season, LeBron made, according to this, $37.44 million. Sue's bonus for getting the Seattle Storm into the 2020 finals was $11,356. LeBron's bonus for winning the 2020 finals, $370,000. Now, before any feminists get in here and start talking shit or start sending responses with that, let's clarify, or as Millie Jackson would say, let's clarify a few things. Okay, now, Sue survived the WNBA and fortunately managed to get through it in spite of the fact that it had failed once before. We know the story with LeBron. You know, literally out of high school, they're asking this kid, make us all money. And while you're doing that, don't get caught up in any trials and tribulations and shit. No drama, you know, no nasty stories, nothing that would besmirched the image of the NBA. And he did that. Not only did he do that, he made everybody money. I mean everybody money. And they put all this burden on this teenager from Akron, Ohio. And some did it hoping that he would fail because, you know, hey, this little black guy, he's supposed to fail. He's supposed to fall prey for all the stereotypes, red meat, white women, chocolate, whatever the fuck it is. And he didn't. Not only did he hold up, he was built to last. And you can see the effects by the growth of how basketball leapfrogged over baseball into second place. And he put basketball on display in a good way for the entire world. Now, if you're doing that, I would say you're taking care of business. And you're making it clear to everybody that this is the true face of the league. He was entrusted with that responsibility, and as far as I'm concerned, he has held up to it big time. Sue Bird, for all her talent, was never asked to hold up the league. And I said, she's a damn good player. We like her. We like watching Sue. She can ball. But one of the problems, as I see it, is the league doesn't have a rim rocker. You know, a high-ticket item. Somebody who generates electricity when you see them play. And the reason I started to think about this last night going into this morning was I remember watching a women's volleyball match. And in this match, I believe, well, I can't remember both teams, but one team that was there at that time was the University of Hawaii. And they had a girl on the team named Rita Crockett. Now, Rita was maybe 5'7", 5'8", tops. But Rita has some serious hops. She had like a 38-inch vertical. So she's up in the net with the big sisters, spiking and doing all that other good shit that you see sometimes in competitive volleyball. Now, if Rita Crockett were a WNBA player and she could dunk like that, I don't mean, you know, I mean, Lisa Leslie's 6'5", God bless her. And I know she can just drop it in. Brittany Griner, 6'8", she can just drop it in, you know. But if Brittany Griner were 5'8", and she came off a pick and drove the lane and dunked, that's what would get people up out of their seats. You know, Maya Moore seems to understand that aspect of it. You know, we like Maya. We like actually like all the WNBA players because they are playing a great fundamental ball. But it's not putting asses in the seats. So don't sit there and try to compare and say this is your argument for gender equity. No, it's not. In the real world, their equity has to do with, at least in a competitive capitalist country, is how you make your money. How and can you make the money? You know? And for Exhibit A in this situation, I give you Venus and Serena Williams, the huntress and the goddess. Hey, when they came along, you didn't hear, or you all say you heard of very few big-ticket items in terms of personalities on the women's side. I mean, who was there? Anna Kournikova, who never won a fucking tournament? Who was average at best, but she was blonde and somewhat attractive. So, yeah, we'll Google over her, but on the court, she wasn't shit. Was it Martina Navratilova, who was a chubby kid from Czechoslovakia, who then got born again hard and showed amazing athleticism? Even though Martina changed her game and went full hard court and became a champion, even that wasn't rocking the world. You had Steffi Graf. Steffi, who was nicknamed Fräulein Forehand. You know, and all that. Steffi, she was athletic. She was graceful. But even Steffi didn't have that kind of that rocked the house. So here comes Venus and Serena. And Billie Jean King, give her credit, saw this. And they got together and talked turkey over getting paid. Now, because men's tennis was dealing with a, I won't say an old guard, but people who had about as much electricity as a dead battery, they weren't getting anything out of that. Venus, through Billie Jean, worked this out where they said, hey, wait a minute now. You know, when you go to the Grand Slam events, you know, You got the men's field, but the ladies are rocking now. You know, we're doing damage. And whether they come to boo us or say nasty things about us or they cheer us on, we are becoming the show. So they have to think about all of that. And sure enough, you know, if not the gate receipts, the logic behind it was sound. You know, all of a sudden, people are watching tennis because the Williams ladies are playing. Just like we saw with Tiger and golf. You know, yeah, the needle went up a little bit when either of the women's Williams women were playing. And because of that, they had to make adjustments as well, which led to a decade-long dominance of the Williams women in women's tennis. And they did not go quietly into the night because they took the whole fucking tournament with them. They beat people like Steffi, although it didn't happen often. Martina, that's probably the tail end of her career. They created a whole new list of rivals. I will never forget the look on Martina Hingis's face when she beat one of the Williams women, and then she had to face the other, and then, of course, lost. And she's like, fuck! They do what these bitches. You know? And I'm saying that with respect. But having said that, point is that Venus and Serena understood their value. They didn't just do it for themselves. They did it for the Naomi's, Osaka's, and Coco Gauff's. So let's agree to Madison Keys and Sloane Stephens's to come up and come on after they split the scene. So now when you see a tennis tournament, who are you looking for? You're going to go where the excitement is. Where's the box office? You know, you want to see Venus covering all that ground, going sideline to sideline, just whacking it. You want to see Serena with her tenacity going down to almost match point before rallying, as I've seen her do on at least two occasions. I mean, that's exciting stuff. And they do have charisma. You know, Serena's power, Venus's grace, especially when she plays at Wimbledon. You know, she looks like second coming off of Althea Gibson with her lankiness and ability to cover the court. So they built up a sound case with the soundest reasons of all. Motherfuckers want to come see us. They want to see us play. They know we're exciting. They know we play hard. They know if you see us, you might see us win. They had to comply. Yeah, she's a drawing card. If Venus or Serena wasn't in the final somewhere, the ratings dropped off. They saw proof of it. So they said, yeah, sisters are doing it for not just themselves, but everybody on the tourney. So everybody gets paid. You know, I would suspect there's more than one reason why Naomi Osaka appreciates and respects Serena, you know. Serena made her come out of her shell and stir that competitive fire within her. You know, she may sound meek and mild at the press conference, but make no bones about it. Naomi Osaka is intense without pretense. And she plays to win always. And Coco Gauff is just starting to learn that now at 15, 16, whatever her age is. But again, the point is, everybody understands their box office potential. Sue Bird, for all her skill, for all the championships she's won, it doesn't come close. You know, she's lucky, and I say lucky not in a condescending manner, she's lucky that she had the opportunity to make a living like this. And if we go back to the early days of women's ball and people like Debbie the Pearl Mason and Carol Blazejowski, moving on from that to Ann Donovan and Nikisha Sales and all these other female players. And then when the Pro League came back on again, You know, Cynthia Cooper, Cheryl Swoops. All these people put in work. Becky Hammon had to go to Russia to make money. And many of the other female athletes, they understood that too. Why? Because your game wasn't marketable enough to garner a TV contract big enough to help out with your salaries. That's the short version. But to try to make a meme to say, well, something's wrong because Sue's not getting paid as much as LeBron. Fuck no. Sue's getting paid what the market bears for her. Yeah, you have a problem with that. Speak to the market. You know, LeBron making $37 million? Well, he's making $37 million because that's nothing compared to what he's made the league. We always say when we talk about athletes in terms of basketball, football, team sports, you know, if he's making X million dollars a season, then the owners are making X, X, X. Oh, I forgot X, excuse me, X amount of money. So don't be silly. This is stupid to even put this out there. We can't go there about that. And it's, again, it's no diss off Sue Bird. Sue can ball. She's all right with us. And Sue, if you could make more, we ain't mad at you. Go get your paper, baby. But that speaks of more of a chauvinistic design to not allow them, women to succeed in every aspect. You know, now, of course, we have always said when you're playing team sports professionally, you know, you are essentially an employee. You got to go to work like everybody else. Based on the sport, you're responsible for your uniform, and regardless of your sport, no matter what comes down the pipe, you're still responsible. You have to be able to understand that. And because of it, you're also understanding that you must be mindful of all the in-house bullshit that can happen while you're on the job. Now, the reality of this is that Sue is an employee. She's an employee for the Seattle Storm, playing in the WNBA, who again had a second shot at this. His first edition died. Now, we know Sue's put in work. We know that the league's put in work. We know that there are other players who have put in work. However, you know, don't give me that hand. Don't even try to create an argument that would imply that something's wrong with this picture. Yeah, what's wrong with it is that women are not getting paid as much on the dollar in this case, and it reflects other situations in society where women are not being paid as much as men for doing a similar job. Consider basketball as a similar job, yes, but consider the profit margins regarding, say, that takes it to another level. You know, are we at the point where we'll see the Phoenix Mercury and the San Antonio Silver Stars, whatever they call them, the Indiana Fever, playing the prime time holiday games like the NBA does? Will we see them rocking on Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving, actually or American or Canadian Thanksgiving? That's in October. Will we ever see prime time games like that involving women's basketball? Probably not. But if a suggestion were to be made that, how about in conjunction with the NBA, that you get a twilight doubleheader? So let's say, for argument's sake, Minnesota Lynx, Phoenix Mercury at 2 o'clock Eastern, followed by Minnesota Timberwolves at Phoenix Suns. Now, back in the day with the Apollo Theater, you had the Sunday shows. where you had a matinee in the afternoon, and then there was like a 3-hour break so that folks could get dinner or take naps or whatever. And then you had the evening show. Cool. House got filled. Everybody had a chance to chill out and do what they needed to do. And, you know, 8, 9 o'clock at night, you go home happy. Works for me. Now, I don't know whether the NBA would take the WNBA under its wing. I mean, you can finance it for all you want, but that'll also help make the argument that you got nothing to work with. Because if the numbers say this is not working on TV at this level, or the lack of exposure because it's only on one source makes it more difficult as well, we're in totally uncharted territory here. The bottom line is, can the WNBA make itself more appealing so that a Sue Bird can deservedly not just get paid more, but even get paid a little more some because she helped put in work and build the league? That's a good idea. It's a fair idea. But it's not one come off in the spirit of Title IX and saying, well, because LeBron's making millions, Sue Bird should be making millions too. Fuck that. That's bullshit. You know, LeBron earned his money. And not just for playing fucking basketball. He's an ambassador of the game. His off-the-court works, the things he does, also reflect positively on the NBA, the school he built, the other things that he has done, his being able to be a pitch man for even something simple as fucking soda. It all works because he's an upright brother. He means what he says and says what he means. And he's not one of them cats that's going to get caught up late at night. He's not going to be on the police blotter. Lord knows you wanted to almost kill the golden goose before it laid an egg with some of the shit some of these people in the media were trying to do. And there are still media fucks who resent who he is and what he did, because they won't give him the time of day. And it's to their detriment, because look where LeBron is and look where they are. They know they got to stay in their lane, and I mean stay in their lane. They're not going to pimp off his black ass anymore. They can't. When he won his championship, the first one, he shut them the fuck up. When he won a second one, he shut them up even more. And then they ever started this nonsense about, well, what is his legacy going to be? His legacy is going to be he minds his fucking business and does work. Your legacy is going to be your fucking parasite who's looking to try to scream on him and pimp off his ass as much as you can, if you can. But your trick bag actions did not work. And to a lesser degree, this thing, this meme that I see is a good example of a trick bag. You know, there's no intention to demean Sue Bird's work. If Sue Bird played abroad, she'd be making a lot more than $215,000. We got that. That's true. But it doesn't change the fact that as much as we may want to give Sue, if the market doesn't dictate that, you're fucked. As simple as that. It ain't going nowhere. And the fact that she's put in all this time means Father Time is going to take her ass out anyway. So whoever the next Sue Bird or Maya Moore may be, well, that's going to be the problem. Unless they can dunk on a drive and raise the roof with the crowd, that spark just will not be there. It won't be raised. My man Tony McLean is in the mix now. And Tony, I don't know how much you heard, but to quote Peter Griffin, the bird is definitely the word.
Yeah, And, you know, these stories always seem to come up, you know, just as the WNBA season starts.
Thank you.
Let's put it, you know, it's funny. You know, the NBA, to be fair, the NBA has treated the WNBA sort of like, you know, an ugly stepsister over the years. They throw money there, but they really don't. They really don't try. I mean, they sort of tolerate it, which is the set, which is somewhat part of the problem, as well. And you know, early on, they only wanted to have NBA folks that were working for those teams, and then about a few years, I think about 5 or 6 years in, they allowed they had folks who didn't have any NBA ties to own teams. And they sort of said, you know, okay, hey, you know, it's been real, you know.
Right.
They didn't, like, cut them loose or whatever.
It's true.
But they didn't – they but put it this way. You've never really got the situation where they've tried to cultivate a real relationship. I mean – They cross promote during the finals and the playoffs, and you know you see them doing the stuff at the All Star weekend when they have the challenge or whatever. But unfortunately, women's sports, and see, it's an easy thing. Women's sports, and you know, certain women's sports does not generate the kind of income that the NBA does. Now, if we were talking about the Williams sisters entity, and you have to say it just like that, that's a whole different thing because...
Yeah, and they bring that up earlier.
Well, see, the two of them by themselves could probably bankroll the damn in WNBA.
Exactly, yes.
But see, the funny thing is also is that, well, see, here, you know, when I saw that story, you know, we've seen it all the time. It reminded me, and I hate to do this, of the election. A few years back. 63% of her own gender did not vote for Miss Entitled.
Hillary. That's right.
Yeah. And that is reflective of so many things in regard to women. And I don't think this is sexist when I say this. This is just a fact.
No, that's right.
Other than a handful of hardcore fans, and every sport has their hardcore fans.
True.
Women don't support women's sports. Not enough that will move the needle, so to speak.
That's right.
There are, you know, I think I can say this without, you know, whatever. There are probably more female NFL fans for certain teams than there are total female fans.
Definitely in Philadelphia, I would agree. Mm-hmm.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Then all the WNBA. Now, the only major complaint I've ever, I'll take it back. There's only been two major complaints that I've ever had with the WNBA. And one of them, I know it's something they almost physically can't do, and that is they don't play during traditional basketball season. And I know a lot of it has to do with, you know, gyms, arenas, and lack thereof, because usually the traditional basketball time of the year, arenas are double, triple billed, because in most instances – NBA and NHL and NCAA teams are playing in those gyms, arenas, or what have you. The other pet peeve I've always had is, I cannot understand why they never put a team in Knoxville or just in the state of Tennessee.
Exactly. I'm feeling you.
A bunch of former Lady Vols on that team and what have you.
They'll draw.
To me, it literally sells itself. They're in every other major market. And see, I get it that, you know, early on they wanted to be in all the other NBA cities, and that's fine. I get that. But you know, they're going into their 25th year now. And it's almost like there's some people, and I think it's more the NBA than the actual WNBA, is that, well, we've always done it this way. We've always done it this way.
Right.
And, okay, yeah, but that's the problem. You know, maybe, you know, maybe after all this time now, maybe it is time to do it a little differently. Because, see, here's the thing. And I don't think, again, I don't think I'm sexist when I say this. Sue Bird is never going to make the same amount of money as a LeBron James. So that analogy needs to stop. Now, I get it. Now, it is unfortunate that, say, the 13th man on the worst team in the NBA makes more than Sue Bird. But, again, a lot of that just has to do with, you know, I'm no economics major, and I didn't play one at school. But bottom line is the WNBA is never going to be able to generate the same kind of revenue that the NBA does.
No.
And
not.
I'm not saying – and it has nothing to do with how many games or whatever.
That's right.
Look, LeBron James is an international icon. Notice I was able to say that without making any weird iguana noise, but that's a whole other story. But there are. Let's put it this way: when one of your most identifiable players has to take a year off to be able to make top dollar, that speaks volumes as to where you are as an entity. You know, and of course, I'm talking about Diana Taurasi, who basically took a year off of the WNBA to go play in Russia because she was able to make more money over there. Now, you know, we're always, you know, there's always the fake flag waving, you know, USA this and we can do this and we can do that. And, you know, the whole crap that we usually see around Olympic time when it's, you know, USA, USA or whenever. Or whenever, you know, whenever there's a Klan rally, you know, USA, 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 you know. But, and again, I think I can safely say I am not one of these, for lack of a better word, sexist pigs that just talks so shit about the WNBA and has probably never sat down and watched a game.
Exactly.
Because of where I live in Connecticut, women's basketball is huge. I very, very briefly covered UConn women way before they became the national power that they've become. But that being said, I like the WNBA. I like the style. Yeah. I like women's basketball in general. And I do like and follow the WNBA. It's gotten jerked around over the years by the NBA, entities that push it, and that has played a huge role into it. But again, all that being said, even if you did pump it up a little bit more and took it to an entirely different level, I still don't know if they would be able to generate the same sort of say the NHL could. And again,
Listen. This
is not trying to take shots at the league. It's just, like you said, it's just economics. And see,
that's right.
This was even before the pandemic. Now, with the pandemic, and yes, people are starting to slowly, you know, generate back towards sports and everything else. They're still going to probably go through that even more so into their coming season. This is their fourth commissioner that they're on now, fourth or fifth.
That's right. Yeah.
And, you know, again, they've had their problems. And I think the fact that they're still standing after 25 years speaks to their resiliency, and I think it speaks to the fan base that they do have, albeit smaller than the other four. But still small. It's still very,
That's
very
right.
small.
It is still small. And they're running into a red, white, and blue wall of chauvinism. You know, this is the ultimate equal pay, equal work situation. Although the entertainment aspect of this dictates that you only get what the market bears. So unless everybody is dying to play or see women's professional basketball, it ain't happening. And the marketing issues have also been a problem.
And it's only been in spurts. And see, here's the thing. The WNBA was basically inspired by the women's dream team in 96 of the Atlanta team. Rebecca Lobo, Dawn Staley, Cheryl Swoops, Lisa Leslie, and others. And matter of fact, all three of them were basically the first three players, you know, that sort of went in that inaugural WNBA draft. They basically,
That's right.
And all of them are in the Hall of Fame, and deservedly so, because of their contributions on and off the court.
Right.
Equally. But again, even with that, you know, the Atlanta games in, I want to say, like August, September of 96.
Mm-hmm.
The WNBA's first game was nearly a year later in 97.
Yeah.
Whatever from there never crossed over.
It never caught on. Yeah.
Now, to its credit, it's had spurts. It's had instances. Now, we've talked about this several times where in the early years, and this is no secret, the WNBA has a huge following in the LGBT community.
Right.
And for the longest time, the WNBA, especially in the big cities like New York and L.A., they sort of they didn't want to embrace them.
Exactly.
And they sort of got shamed into it. But it also led to a surge. It led to the popularity surge, ironically in those two cities as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they've maintained
that. I would throw Seattle in there as well because
Seattle had also
been in that mix. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but see, Seattle wasn't an original. See, Seattle came in after the wave, literally. But
yeah,
see,
you're
but
right.
Like you
That's
said,
right. I stand correct. Mm-hmm.
But because of the fact of the LGBT community in Seattle and the fact that they were basketball starved because the Sonics had left, that played
True.
Into a role, that played a huge role into their
mm-hmm.
success. And basically, this is where the Sue Bird thing comes, because Sue Bird is basically what Ken Griffey was to the Seattle Mariners, Sue Bird is to the Seattle Storm, plain and simple.
True.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right down to popularity. Well, exactly. And for every, for lack of a better word, for every, say, three hardcore Sue Bird fans, you probably have and still have 10 to 12 junior fans. And junior's already been in the Hall of Fame and has cultivated his own.
Been there, done that.
Yeah. Yeah. But unfortunately, and again, it's not sexist. It's just economics.
Nope.
Now, you could argue, well, women don't get paid like the men on a globe on an overall scale, and I would say, yes. And again, but see, that sort of plays, unfortunately, into why they're not able to generate the same popularity. It's a vicious cycle because
mm-hmm.
women don't get paid as much, and then when they put their products out there, they don't get paid as much either. And
right.
Now, look, it's very easy to just say, you know, it's all sexism and whatever. And look, no one's trying to ignore. Yeah, and you look. Exactly. Thank you, Captain Obvious. But and again, I don't say that to ridicule or whatever, but see,
no.
You have to, dare I say it, like one of our colleagues, you got to go beyond that.
That's
you
right.
You got to go beyond that because of the sport, because of where, think of where sports was in 97 and where they are now. Now, they were already sort of on the outside looking in then.
They were. Yep.
Now, again, the fact that they're still here, I think, should be applauded. I think because
true.
They've gone through some stuff. You know, they've had franchise moves. They've had owner moves and all sorts of on and off the court controversies. But they're still here. It's sad that mainstream. You know, let me stop. White man's media still sort of looks at them as, you know, when Imus made his comments about the Rutgers women, it wasn't just about the Rutgers women. He was making a commentary. He was saying out loud what a lot of alleged sports editors, male sports editors, think about female sports, especially basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Especially basketball. And it's funny because people still say, well, he never should have lost his job because of that. But said, which just lets me know that, you know, you didn't get it when it first happened, and you still don't get it. And again, I say, you know, we say all that, and I wish there was, I'll put it this way. I really think that they should try to play during traditional basketball season. Now, I know that's easy for me to say, and especially now coming off the pandemic when even traditional basketball season has been compromised. But I think they need to. And especially now because coming off of this this particular women's Final Four, where we were basically introduced again about the gender gap in regards to women's sports or what have you. You know, you had the historic thing where you had two black head coaches make it to the Final Four. Both of them clear WNBA ties. And see, that's a legacy thing to me for the WNBA as well. Because
I agree.
20 years ago, you know, those girls didn't have a WNBA to even fall back on. I always go back on the movie Basketball, which to me, while it was a great vehicle for Lathan, it was also basically the story of a lot of WNBA women, because back in the day, you know, we all, if you've seen the movie, you know, it was, you know, Sanaa was a, you know, great star for USC, and she wound up going to play ball overseas, and then eventually came back home just in time to play in the inaugural season of the WNBA. Now, there were great players before all of that who never got that opportunity. You know, in my hometown in particular, one of the Final Fours, one of the women's Final Four outstanding players, a player by the name of Tracy Claxton for Louisiana Tech. Tracy Claxton's one of the most best, not just the most, one of the best female players that ever come out of the state of Connecticut. She's just one of the best players ever. And you're talking John Williamson, Calvin Murphy, Walter Luckett, so on and so forth. But you could make the clear argument that Tracy Claxton was one of the best, at least one of the top five ever, male or female, to come out of the state of Connecticut and ball. And, you know, and yes, I saw her play and hand out L's to my high school back in the day. So I'm speaking from experience. But all that being all, you know, and again, I didn't mean to go on too long, but all that being said, I wish there was a way that they that could see, again, going back to the Williams sisters, they made, especially Venus. Venus made it a point to say, hey, hey, y'all got to pay us like you pay the men. Now, maybe not on the same, but at least, you know, somewhat equally. Because especially on the Grand Slam level, the women, the men were being paid almost five times more.
Yes.
Exactly. But see, in a sport like tennis, because you have two iconic players like the Williams sisters, and because they use their forum in that vein to help women who didn't necessarily like them, but they did it anyway.
Exactly. That's right.
I guess for lack of a better word, the WNBA needs a Williams, needs either a Serena or a Venus. And
well, that's the whole point. The star power is not there. Before you came on, I talked about a player named Rita Crockett, who was a volleyball player back at the University of Hawaii. She was 5'8", but she was in front of the net because she had like a 40-inch vertical. And they highlighted shit she did because, well, she was actually a pretty fantastic athlete. You know, in the lore of the NBA, we just had people like Elgin Baylor pass, who was a tweener at 6'5", but did amazing things, you know. And because of that, he helped to infuse the NBA lore even more. You know, if Rita Crockett was a basketball player and she's 5'8 and dunking, oh, she's amplified. Because everybody's going to come to see, will she dunk tonight? Is she going to do it? You know, I mean, we've seen Lisa Leslie and Brittany Griner and did Rebecca Lobo ever dunk? I'm not sure. But the whole point is.
I don't think so. But see, you know, here's the thing. I know what you're saying in regards to the dunk. And you know, the WNBA did try to hype it. I remember when Lisa Leslie made her first dunk, and they literally, you know, I mean, they went crazy with it. They, you know, I would be in the bathroom and I would see it on the highlights in the bathroom and all this other stuff. And I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. But see, here's the thing. The WNBA does not have to change their whole being just or whatever. Because, see, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the women's game in and of itself should be the selling point. Now, I understand why they would want to have a Dominique-type player or a Jordan-type player or a LeBron-type player. And I don't think I'm being sexist when I say this, but I want to preface it. The women don't need that. They don't. And but again, I understand why they would try to push for that. But I think, I know. I mean, you know, give me my trowel and my napkin, and I'm good. But look, when an icon like a John Wooden says your game is 10 times better than anything the men put out, that should be one of their selling points.
You're right. That's to their detriment. They never ran with that. The voice of the so-called voice of the WNBA, whoever that may have been, was negligent in that aspect of it. If they didn't keep accentuating fundamentals, which they didn't do, then people would have appreciated players like Cynthia Cooper and Cheryl Swoops and others better, because they would understand, oh, that's why she's good. You know, I mean, instead of just assuming that, well, you know, just put the ball in the hoop and stuff like that. It's not as simple as that. But there was nobody to help them do grunt work with that. And the league, to their detriment, didn't help their situation either.
But this is where I fall back with the NBA, because see, the NBA can help them with that.
Yeah.
To me, you know, but you are correct. Did the WNBA drop the ball in that? Absolutely. But they also got fouled. They also got stripped of the ball a little bit by their male counterparts. In the, again, in just pushing the game. Because, again, The WNBA, you always got the feeling, especially with Stern, that it was sort of like, oh, yeah, there's the WNBA. They never really fully embraced it only when it was to their advantage.
In their eyes,
it was never advantage. But, yeah, even though I'm saying all that, yes, the WNBA is also negligent in part of its demise as well.
They tried in marketing the game individually, league-wise. I mean, Seattle Storm would put out things like lesbian date night. You know, they understood their fans enough to say, okay, fine, we know that they're gay women playing in the NBA. You know, but that doesn't change the fact it's a good game. You know, come check the game, see us, and see if y'all dig it or not. You know, okay, I'm sorry.
And it's a slippery slope because remember, they sort of got shamed into pushing that envelope, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since then, they have embraced it. But I wonder how much they may have hurt themselves in those initial years by not embracing that crowd, to that maybe it would have that they would be in a different situation. Because when you realize, let's be honest, when you realize the political and economical aspects of the LGBT community right now, if the WNBA had sort of tried to pull that during had tried to be like anti-LGBT during their initial time, they might have called them out, you know, like the way things happen now, and
right.
I'm wondering if that didn't hurt them big picture wise, because maybe the women would be making equidistant money in a sense, because
that's true.
Thing, because see that disparity between them and the WNBA and the money disparity between the NBA and the NBA is always going to be there, unless
that's right.
you get a Williams sisters like effect in the league,
mm-hmm.
and so far there hasn't been one. Now they've had great players. You know, when they celebrated the 20th anniversary, put together, you know, the all all-time team, and there were there were active players on that team as well. But you know, the aforementioned women that we mentioned were all on there. Other players over the years. Now, I also thought, and this is just maybe just my own ignorance, I thought when Brittany Griner came into the league, I thought that she would become a difference maker. I really did.
You and me both.
She's been a good player, but she has not been the difference maker that I thought she would be.
Right.
Now, I don't know if that has to be the fact that she plays in Phoenix or just the fact that maybe we just misread, maybe she didn't, you know, because, again, she's been a great player. You know, she's been, you know, defensive player of the year a bunch of times. She's been an all-star.
Mm-hmm.
She's won championships and all that other stuff. So in that vein, she's definitely lived up to her whatever. But
I agree.
I thought that she would be, dare I say, I thought that she would be a difference maker for the WNBA. Now,
here's one that would have done something. We've talked for years about the fact that nobody ever stepped up to Cream and said, teach me the skyhook. You know, what would it have been like if Leslie or, I forget the other tall sister is from L.A., used to play at the University of Tennessee.
Candace Parker.
Thank you, Candace. But the bottom line is, if anybody had stepped to him, say if Brittany said, you know, Cream, I know you're the boss with that skyhook. Can you teach me?
Sure.
I would have really been curious to see if the effort would have been followed through. Because obviously, there's very few people who are going to block Brittany's shot to begin with. But to follow through on the grace of an offensive weapon like that would make her invincible if she mastered the skyhook.
Knowing Kareem, I think on his end, he definitely would have had no problem with it.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I think Kareem would have.
Yeah.
He'd have jumped on it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it would have showed his ability as a teacher on top of that. Remember, they screwed him out of a coaching job. He always wanted to coach, it seemed.
Exactly. And see, just his nature. Look, he has always been one, you know, he's a cerebral guy. He's always been a cerebral guy, even in his young days. You know, you always got the feeling that there was an old soul with him. Even in those pictures, even in them pictures of him at Power Memorial, he'd look like, wow, why is this 33-year-old guy playing at Power Memorial? Oh, he's 17.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah,
but
wise beyond his years, as they say.
The funny thing is, the sad thing is probably a WNBA. I shouldn't say sad, but I think a WNBA player would probably approach Kareem sooner than an NBA player would.
I would say so. Yes.
Not to me. I think that speaks more of the NBA players than it does the WNBA players, quite frankly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what? We can't forget the fact that when Kareem was in the league, you know, first of all, he was a Muslim. And then there was that incident when he was in Milwaukee where I think there was some intra-faith nonsense going on and stuff. And then the Kent Benson incident where he knocked him the fuck out, or at least he knocked him on the ground.
No, he didn't knock him down.
Benson tried to gorilla his ass.
Benson wanted to know where Allah was, and he just let him know where Allah was. That's all.
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm.
But they've never really been kind, I think, or respectful of the contributions that Kareem has put forth. You know,
historically, only when they want to bash the current players. It's sort of like how they use Ali and Jackie Robinson and Jesse Owens.
Exactly.
They have no problem embracing Kareem when they want to diss the modern day ball players. But while Kareem was playing, he was just another nigga in their eyes.
That's right.
And a Muslim nigga on top of that.
The way you say that, it's sadly profound because, you know, the whole point of this meme was to try to make it seem as if there was a major problem. You know?
Yeah.
No, there's not. It's not a major problem. It's a problem. But if you're going to do that, then tell the rest of the story. Tell them that the WNBA does not draw as well as the NBA. Tell them that the WNBA doesn't have as many iconic players, and the ones that were there, they didn't use them right in their overall promotion of the league because some of the best ones had to leave in order to get paid.
Exactly. But see, unfortunately, in this media, in this day, and see, this is the pluses and minuses, and maybe more so minuses, of social media. Because you put the meme out there as is, and it's supposed to, and basically, it's supposed to evoke a, that's not right.
Exactly.
I don't deny the fact that it isn't, that it's not right.
Yeah.
No, I think everyone acknowledges that, but you have to look, you know, dare I evoke the ghost of Paul Harvey, but you have to look at the whole
story. That's
the
right.
The rest of the story. I'm sorry. But yeah, but see, when you're trying to, in a sense, push a narrative, then it's easier to do a meme and you get to see. Now, are you trying to get likes on Facebook or are you trying to tell the entire story? See, unfortunately, a lot of times, and I think all of us have been somewhat guilty of it as well, where you put the meme out and, you know, you go from there. But, you know, you have to go beyond that because, see, we're also in an age where people are just quick to react instead mm-hmm. of looking at the whole thing, because people listen more to, you know, unfortunately, and I think with all the military hunters on Facebook and other social medias, people listen to react as opposed to listening to say, well, wait a minute, that's you're correct, but there's more to it than that. Because, again, the pluses and minuses of social media is what up, because, like, I have actually been somewhat battling with Yankee fans the last 2 days. Everybody and their mama knows how the Mets game ended the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you had these Yankee fans that came out literally and said, this is an outrage. This would never happen to in baseball. And all I did was pull up the clip of Reggie Jackson's butt getting right in the way. Well, his hip, I shouldn't say his entire ass, but his butt. Everybody remembers the 78 World Series. I believe it was game 4.
He got in the way.
He got in the way.
And my basic thing, look, did the umpire blow the call? Absolutely blew the call.
He fucking blew the call.
now, see, a lot of that, now, again, there's another thing. See, a lot of that has to do, to me, also, you know, now with replay and the scrutiny that these guys get that they haven't been, that traditionally they haven't gotten over the years, that added to that. Because, see, what also hurt him is that he consulted with his guys before making, he had chances to get it right. And he fucked it up twice. Now, he initially called the strike, and then he said, oh, he got hit. And then he consulted, and then you would think one of his guys said, you know, you called the fucking strike before you called them getting hit. And he would just say, the strike stands. But for whatever reason, he went with the he got hit, and they, you know, maybe it was a situation, maybe it was an immaculate reception. How many cops can you get out here to let me know so I won't get killed by these Met fans? I can only give you 4. Okay, 4, but, you know, he got hit. Take your base. 4 games over. See ya. But I say all that to basically say all these Yankee fans in their smug elitism, you know, first of all, why are they worrying about the Mets? But that's another 2-hour conversation in and of itself. But that being said, I say all that to, like, unfortunately, with social media and how it sort of has interloped into regular media and whatever, when you put a meme out there like that where Sue Bird only makes a quarter of what LeBron makes, that's a damn shame.
Because,
Look, people are already hating on LeBron. You know, you still got people in Cleveland that hate him for leaving Cleveland, even though he fucking came back and won you a fucking title. But, you know, hey, you know. Forgive me. But,
no, but it's so true.
This is a legit, you know, it is a legitimate argument. I'm not saying that it's not a legitimate argument. But, again, you've got to tell the entire story. And I think that's, from us being, you know, hardcore, you know, before Fred Flintstone journalists, you know, who, what, where, when, why, how, that's always how we do things. Because, again, a meme is fine. And it will evoke a conversation. But unfortunately, a lot of times it evokes the wrong conversation.
Yes.
It's sort of like the, dare I say it, the Jordan versus James arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That, and again, that's another 2-hour show.
Exactly.
In and of itself. But yeah, that's, you know, we say all of that to just say, It's a legit story. There is merit to it, but you have to look at it on the whole. And again, I would love to see the in my eyes, I like the WNBA. I've always liked the WNBA. Still do. I am looking forward to the new season as well.
Yes.
Excuse me. Unfortunately, it's going to get some legs for a couple of days,
mm-hmm.
and then everybody's going to go back into, you know, telling you how great this kid from BYU is, or going on and on about, you know, something in baseball or
mm-hmm.
something going on. It's going to get lost in the shuffle. And sadly, that's sort of the problem because, again, the WNBA only seems to get eyes when something's negative. You know, when they, you know, look, they've had this, you know, there's been some instances where they've had some brawls over the years. And the sad
mm-hmm.
thing is the brawls get more, more play than actual events on the field. Matter of fact, you know, we spoke of Brittany Griner before. The whole
mm-hmm.
incident with her and her former wife, where the both of them got arrested because of a domestic violence.
That's right.
The sad thing is that's been more – people think of that. There are mainstream folks that think more of that, that know more of that story than what
mm-hmm.
she's accomplished on the court. You know, we saw it surfaced before that the head coach there at Baylor basically sort of told her, you know, please don't let everybody know that you're gay. Keep that
mm-hmm.
to yourself. And see, that falls into an old, you know, the don't ask, don't tell. Thing that's been a part of that community for years. So it's
right.
It's very sad. It's very sad that no one really gives the WNBA its due on its merit. And unfortunately, because of the nature of the business and because of the nature of the eyes or lack of eyes watching their games,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be there for a while. And I wish I could.
Yeah.
I wish I could think of something or come up with something that could change the narrative, but off the top of my head.
Well, you know what? Mm-hmm. For the narrative to change, Tony, and we got Radio Reggie in the mix, for the narrative to change, there has to be a desire for them to succeed. And you can't succeed if you don't know your subject matter, and you can't succeed if you can't pass that knowledge on to everybody else so they can see ideally what they want them to see regarding the league and the certain components via the players and stuff like that. There are
mm-hmm.
stars in the league, but if there's not a forum where you see those stars, you as a fan living in Philadelphia can't get a dig Maya Moore in Minnesota because, well, shit, she ain't on air. You know, we can't see her. I mean, if she's on ESPN 16 somewhere and whatnot, you might get a peek at her. But
mm-hmm.
how are you going to know? You know, unless you really do college basketball for women, and that's something that will only increase as betting increases because now the gambling bug has struck some of those fans, and they will mm-hmm. use that as a guide. They won't use it because they love the game. They'll use it because they love to see if they can make money from the game. You know,
guys, apologize coming in, but when Draymond Green kind of went after the WNBA talking about why they're not making money, he was half right and half wrong because, number one.
Exactly.
Well, you know about that story, right, G?
Yeah, we'll see. He half.
Yeah, go ahead. Help me with it, T. Help me with it.
He literally and figuratively half-assed his story. He was exactly right in regards to and the revenue. He was 100%. But
mm-hmm.
he also threw into the old stereotypes about women's sports and everything like that. And see, that's why it struck a nerve because, you know, and you know. I kind of wish Draymond would, you know, keep his silly comments to his his shitty ass Subway commercials, but that's a whole other thing in of itself. By the way, Mike, my sub has peanut butter and jelly, so fuck them both. By the way,
let me ask you both a question.
That's his problem. Yeah, I mean, but I'm saying, Mike, is he's trying to go ahead and get his spot on his next career being on TV. That's all he's
probably. But let me ask you both this, since this was brought up earlier in the show. Would you guys be in favor of Twilight doubleheaders with the NBA on tap for the early game and the NBA game afterwards? I mean, the ladies' game first and then the men's game afterwards.
Absolutely. That's how the NBA made their bones, because it was the thing of the college game would be the thing.
Now, y'all guys going making sense again. Now, why y'all got to put the facts in the way again? I mean, why you guys got to be doing something
that these
being out of corporation? Bad T-Mac, bad Mike. You got guys making trillions of dollars, and they supposed to have all these great people who are supposed to have these big corporations to go and come up with these great ideas, and here come BSN News again just coming with logic. And they ain't going to do it because it makes sense.
Red, as I said before, my steak has fluff and peanut butter on it. So I stand by my conviction.
There you guys go again, making too much damn sense. They're still in y'all shit now. Next week, they'll say, guess what? We got Twilight double hitters. Oh, where in the fuck have I heard that before?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Y'all need to get a lawyer, man. Get some money, man. They're stealing your shit, man.
Yeah, we just our luck to win.
Tony
Gustav
has 9-1. They're
stealing our stuff.
Tony got 9-1 on his phone, and he should be ready to push the one. But I digress.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what, Mike? Knowing our luck, we'll probably get shot by Washington, and then we'll be all fucked up. And then
that's right.
You know it's coming.
Exactly.
Gentlemen,
exactly.
I do want to bring up before Gary Norris Gray and the Cove at the top of the hour, the Masters is going on. They are playing, they are golfing, and et cetera.
It is?
But the spirit of protest.
Unfortunately. I just said unfortunately.
Yeah, but the spirit of protest has remained strong. And, you know, Georgia really wasn't ready for all this shit. They thought it was just going to be another quiet time, you know, Augusta, GA. But no. And I like the fact that the pot is being stirred, not because I'm an anarchist or anything like that. I am heartened by the fact that, you know, y'all just can't skate anymore. You know, they know what they're doing. And this is nothing but a lot of elitist claptrap and shit. You know, they have Lee Elder and his 86-year-old ass, God bless him, going out there as a, you know, token example of, look how long we've been, how far we've gone, you know.
Bullshit.
And Mike, as if on cue, Wednesday going into it, of course, the president of the Masters denounced the Major League Baseball. Basically, he said harumph, harumph three times and then asked Rochester to fill his drink. So, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, really. You know, and that's the sad part about it. They still got that old and plantation. By the way, the golf course is on a fucking plantation. But they don't want to bring those facts out. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
I know,
too.
I've been hanging around you and Mike too long. Bad Reggie. I know. I've been hanging you guys too long.
I forgot about that, but you're right, Reggie. You're right.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
If I can flip back to where we started with this, you know, Venus and Serena made everybody money, and that's when they shut the fuck up. Because remember, you had people who were envious of the ladies. I mean, Chris Everett, she didn't hide her contempt about Serena and how, she
penis
should be winning more tournaments. No. She didn't give a fuck about Serena. But
no.
When them checks were coming out to the ladies on the tour, you better believe they were giving Serena the universal nod, like, thanks, sis. You know, good looking out. You know,
yeah.
But no, please.
Billie Jean King got on that bandwagon real quick, didn't he?
Yeah. No, we love Billie Jean. Yes,
you know,
because of what she did.
To her credit, Billie Jean is pretty much – Billie Jean was one of the few that actually embraced them from day one for the most part.
Yeah, that's why I said thank God for Billie Jean King.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cause she
that's why I don't like Chris Evans.
Well, see, because see, in a sense, Billie Jean was out there all by herself trying to
yeah,
do that stuff. And so the fact that the Williams sisters, in a, you know, were sort of kindred spirits, you know, that's why. But yeah,
and that's why they hate Richard Williams so. Cause Richard said, "Fuck you, we don't care if y'all don't have an Academy and I'm running it." Guess what? Every time my daughter's on there, it reminds you of the ass whooping you're about to receive.
There you go.
So
don't take this ass whooping personally.
His legacy is in all of those Grand Slam championships and all of those other tournament championships, and basically, to a certain extent, to the reason why he and the whole Williams dynasty empire is the reason why y'all are making a couple more bucks.
That's right. And they don't even have the decency, Fred, you're right. They don't even have the decency to say thank you, because once that shit was in effect, the Williams ladies dominated for years. And
well,
I think the doubles accomplishments were even arguably more significant than singles competition, because when the Williams is lined up, they didn't get a number one ranking. And the excuse was always some obscure shit like, well, they didn't play enough. But every time they faced a number one doubles team, they whooped that monkey ass. Every time.
Yeah. It's basically the female version of the Tiger Woods effect. And he got treated the same. He still gets, I mean, he was driving, he was speeding. I mean, I'm no Ellery Queen. I'm no Barnaby Jones. I'm no Ironside. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say he was feeding. That's what caused the crash. All these other investigations and, well, what was he doing? And what about the car? And what? See, their only regret. Damn, I wish his wife had hit him while he was trying to drive.
There you go. That's right. You know what? They regret that he didn't die in the crash.
I'm not joking when
I say that. Do you know how long the mouse would have put propaganda out about him, pieces they would have done on him? The Golf Channel would have been at half mast or whatever the fuck, because they're mourning at the cash cow. Is no longer there. Come on now. They know what's going on.
It's interesting when Baylor won the national championship, how quiet it was about their dark past. They just took a broom and kind of swept over.
Did I miss anything, T?
No. I want to make sure I'm not being delirious now. I'm saying it right.
Put it this way. Baylor scored about 12 points while we were talking. So,
I heard they had a fast break after the game and say, hey, come Zach, get some more of this ass win.
Wow. I mean.
That's right.
I mean, what was I telling you, Mike? They brought out 6.5 gallons of ass whooping on Monday night.
Hey, T, this is Baylor from the locker room. How you like us now?
Yeah, really. It is so funny because even the whole investigation, the guy's sheriff had to take him to the side and say, let it go. He was driving fast, okay?
Exactly.
Let it go.
Yeah. Let it fucking go.
It was almost like Barney. It was almost like Barney Miller, waving his finger at Wojo. Let it go, Wojo.
Yes.
Let it go.
Well, in the spirit of what's supposed to pass for journalism nowadays, the key was to find as much shit as they could so that they could dump on his black ass. And if he didn't realize he wasn't black now, he sure as shit will never learn, because that's always the modus operandi now, to flip the script and provide as much negative content as possible, because it's the bleeds it leads mentality. But it's only if it's black blood bleeding Are we really interested? Are we really want to pursue?
Sure. Hey, Mike, that's why it's the George Floyd trial as opposed to
that's
the Derek Chauvin trial.
Derek Chauvin trial. That's exactly right. Oh, yes. Listen, anybody with any kind of human compassion knows doggone well when that life was squirrels out of that brother, any black man, old or young, they'd say, that could have been me. And
exactly.
That is exactly why this motherfucker should fry. I want to fuck that manslaughter shit. Put his ass in general population with some of the other brothers.
But how
maybe
many times have you seen this many police
shower.
Officers testify against another cop? I was like, it was like the baseball team with Bugs Bunny. Dun, 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 dun,
you know,
dun.
What,
this isn't
but
procedure.
But
dun, 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 dun.
Remember,
this ain't procedure.
They're trying, but
cover
they can't head. It's not so much that there's, you know, they're trying to push a narrative because they're
right.
basically trying to tell you, oh, he was drugged up. That's why he died.
That's right.
So the 9 minutes on his neck had nothing to do with that?
Nothing to do. Nope. Nothing to see
and
here.
Also,
I'm just choking this black bastard out.
Police, and all those so-called big shot police officers are trying to know that the dissent decree is coming down their way from this new administration.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to
mm-hmm.
get it out to me. Oh, no, we didn't see this. We didn't see that bullshit.
Yeah.
And George Floyd said that day, I'm going to die. Because when he saw them cops coming because of the history of what
well,
that,
let's
that
remember,
police officer
there's done. More cases. There's more cases to come here because in addition to this one, the young kid who was the artist or violinist or whatnot who was killed and the asshole cops were taking pictures, smiling and shit, selfies and all that. You know, there are other ones
that's
with less ramifications,
damn.
but they're all dead, and they're going to deal with those too. So they're taking baby steps towards, you know, can we really prosecute a fucking cop? You know, damn well you can. But if you're going to do that, don't just half-ass it. Tap that pension. Take that money out that pocket. Motherfuckers will behave then. You won't be none of that cop bullshit.
See, that's the part. That's the and I gotta go quick, unfortunately.
Yes, sir.
That's the part of the
Don't leave me.
I wish I could. Unfortunately, I
got. Go make that money, bro. I ain't mad at you. Go make that money.
No, I make just enough of it so I can give it to somebody else. But that's another story.
No, that's right.
Join the club.
But that's part of that whole defund the police thing. It's not. Look, no one's trying to say get rid of the police. But defunding the police means going after their pensions when something like this happens. What you know?
Damn right.
Neighborhood. There shouldn't be neighborhoods that there shouldn't be black neighborhoods where the police have more arms than the freaking Irish Republican Army.
Thank
you. Know?
This is Packer online too. The Iron Lady, I'm still bringing more shit.
Shoot.
Hey,
I feel
look,
you, Chief. Definitely.
Look, the only prince that died yesterday, as far as I'm concerned, was DMX. Rest in peace, bro.
Yeah, amen.
Ah,
shit.
That's
right.
Ruff. Where my dog's at?
Yep.
That's right.
Yep.
Well,
all right, guys.
We ain't got to worry about.
I got to break. Chief. You guys, I'll talk to you soon.
Yes,
all right,
sir.
Chief. Be careful.
Right. Thanks, Chief. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Tony was right about DMX, and now he ain't got to worry about losing his mind because his mind can now be at rest. That was one troubled brother, but you know what? He managed through the strength of his character to negotiate his way through all of that.
Hey, Mike, you being in music, we all troubled brothers living in this society. We just manage it a different way. We all walk in line of insanity. What was that brother saying?
Oh, yeah.
Being black in America is walking in line of insanity.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Or as Baldwin would say, you're always pissed. And you know why you're always pissed, because you just run around, okay, when is shit going to happen? You know.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Hopefully, this will be a break because it will segue other situations where cops realize you can't get away with that shit anymore. And that's a long time coming.
At least for these next 3 years. We don't know about the next four,
so,
but at least for these next 3 years.
It's a long time coming. But, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. Reggie, you got any final words for us?
Well, one thing about DMX, anytime you went to a locker room, as Mighty Over said, brothers were blasting his music. And if you don't think DMX went across multicultural line, just Google Woodstock 1999 and that concert.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I've never seen so many white folks hollering, nigga, nigga, nigga. And I'm standing there saying, this is unreal. But yet he had them in the palm of his hand, they're going crazy. But that brother gave money to many causes. The brother made sure that when fans came up, he acknowledged them. If you did him right, he did you right. If you did him wrong, he did you wrong. One thing about that brother, he was real. Because everybody else walked around in slick suits, P. Diddy and them with their high-priced clothing and jewelry. But when DMX and the Rough Riders hit the scene, and you know up in New York, hey, them boys brought the grime and brought the dirt back to real civilization. That's why you see all the money being made in the rapping. God bless you, great warrior DMX. Rest in peace, brother.
Ashe.
Show Motel.
No question.
Show Motel.
No question. Thank you, brother. And we're going to wrap this up with a reminder of what really provoked all of this. You know, we always talk about how many of our humorists, and they've become humorists because they not only make us smile, but they make us think and see why sometimes we gotta laugh to keep from crying as they portray the palette of human emotions out in front of everybody. And sometimes it helps us to reheal. Dave Chappelle did this back in his home, outside his home, in like a cornfield or some shit like that. But my brother was doing Children in the Corn, but all he was doing was imparting some wisdom on all of us. Indulge us as we come out at the top of the hour. Gary Norris Gray and the Gray Liberty Cove. For my brothers Reggie and Tony and the rest of the staff on assignment, everybody, please enjoy the weekend. Please go safe. Wash your hands. Wash your hands. Watch your back.
I'm going to be impacted by my sunburn.
Oh, I don't think so. I've got to be prepared.
Step right over
to
the table. Or you may sit in any of the black chairs that are on the lawn.
Cool.
The tie top or the...
Thank you very much. I hope you all can hear me. Will you guys shut the fuck up? I'm just kidding. That's my family in the back. That's why I did that. Children and stuff. Anyway, this is weird and less than ideal circumstances to do a show. But the only way to figure out if this shit will actually work is to do the goddamn show. So thank you all for coming. I want to shout out all the young people who have had the courage to go out and do all this amazing work protesting. I am very proud of you. You kids are excellent drivers. I am comfortable in the back seat of the car. So carry on, young ones. It's hard to figure out what to say about George Floyd, so I'm not going to say it yet. I'll say something. Are you guys having a good time or is this weird? I gotta tell you, this is actually like the first concert in North America since all this shit happened. So, like it or not, it's history. It's gonna be in the books. At least we tried. There's other comedians who would, well, this is not the first show, but the other shows were like in drive-ins, and if people liked the niggas' jokes, they'd honk the horn. That didn't sound like any fun at all, did it? So what's you guys? You're a black and white friend hanging out? Do you guys know each other? It's It's going to be a quiet car ride home, isn't it? That's good. I'm just kidding. Enjoy your riots. I'm just kidding. They're not really even riots. Have you noticed that? This is a fucking weird time. In like 1993, I'm not sure what year it was, but I was in L.A. I had smoked a joint, and I was watching the movie Apocalypse Now. It was like just after 4 o'clock in the morning. And what later would become the known the Northridge earthquake happened. It felt like it started in my apartment. You know, I'm from east of the Mississippi. On this side, we don't know what earthquakes are about. I got to tell you something, man. Excuse me for burping. This shit was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. A lot of things went through my mind. I was like, not naked, but you know what I mean? Just chilling in my boxes. I put my clothes on. I found my weed and some a pipe and a lighter and some money and my keys. All these things while the earthquake is happening, while I'm experiencing what an earthquake is the first time, and I was certain that I might very possibly die. As a matter of fact, I remember I made a point not to scream, just in case I lived. I wouldn't have to remember myself being vocally terrified, but I forgave myself for being terrified. That earthquake couldn't have been more than 35 seconds. This man kneeled on a man's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Can you imagine that? This kid thought he was going to die. He knew he was going to die. He called for his mother. He called for his dead mother. I've only seen that once before in my life. My father, on his deathbed, called for his grandmother. When I watched that tape, I understood this man knew he was going to die. People watched it. People filmed it. And for some reason that I still don't understand, all these fucking police had their hands in their pockets. Who are you talking to? What are you signifying that you can kneel on a man's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds and feel like you wouldn't get the wrath of God? That's what is happening right now. It's not for a single cop, for all of it. Fucking all of it. I don't mean to get heavy, but we gotta say something. He told the police he couldn't breathe. One of the hardest parts of the tape to listen to, he said, please. I can't tell you. As a man, watching another man go through something like that, what it makes you feel like. I didn't watch the tape for a week. I didn't watch it. I knew. I saw a still picture. I said, I don't want to see this because I can't unsee it. But when I finally watched it, I understood nobody's going home. Anyone who sees this, well, they're going to be furious. Oh. So the other night, I'm in my little clubhouse, and I'm watching Don Lemon, that hotbed of reality. He says, where are all these celebrities? Why aren't you talking? This nigga said everybody. I was screaming at the TV. I dare you to say me, nigga. I dare you. Has anyone ever listened to me do comedy? Have I not ever said anything about these things before? So now all of a sudden, this nigga expects me to step in front of the streets and talk over the work these people are doing as a celebrity? Ask me, do you want to see a celebrity right now? Do we give a fuck what Ja Rule thinks? Does it matter about celebrity? No. This is the streets talking for themselves. They don't need me right now. I kept my mouth shut. And I'll still keep my mouth shut. But don't think that my silence is complicit to all the shit these niggas are saying, trying to get everyone to sing these fucking songs. I know all these songs. I was raised on these songs. Why would anyone care what their favorite comedian thinks after they saw a police officer kneel on a man's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds? I can't get that number out of my head because it was my time of birth on my birth certificate. I was born at 8:46 in the morning, and they killed this nigga in 8 minutes and 46 seconds. I watch everything everybody says. I've seen Candace Owens try to convince white America, don't worry about it. He's a criminal anyway. I don't give a fuck what this nigga did. I don't care what this nigga did. I don't care if he personally kicked Candace Owens in her stinky pussy. I don't know if it stinks, but I imagine it does. And if I ever find out, I'll let you know for sure. I'll tell like Azealia Banks, I'll tell. I'm the worst. But I know why. I figured out why they want to hear from me, and it's serious. The only reason people want to hear from people like me is because you trust me. You don't expect me to be perfect. But I don't lie to you. I'm just a guy. And I don't lie to you. And every institution that we trust lies to us. How come they never talk about Chris Dorner? That's a story about a man who believed he did everything right. Do you know who Chris Dorner is? Well, Chris Dorner, if you remember, was an African-American police officer in the LAPD. He was executing a warrant with his partner, who was a white woman. And white women, I support you, but boy, if y'all don't shut the fuck up. During the process of executing this warrant, this white woman did what Chris Dorner thought was excessive force. I don't know what she did. She kicked a motherfucker that was handcuffed or hit a guy that was handcuffed or something. But Chris Dorner, the black police officer who watched this white woman do this, reported this to his superior, made a formal complaint, and was subsequently fired from the LAPD. He went through the system. He took every legal avenue that he believed he had to get reinstated. And he was not reinstated. And when his last appeal was finished, this motherfucker, some wild shit, wrote a manifesto. You know where this is going. And in that manifesto, he called me a genius. Me, Dave Chappelle. Not just me, but me. He said, Kevin Hart fan too. But he called me a genius, and he told Bradley Cooper, who's a friend of mine, don't do any more hangovers, nigga, that's enough. That's what he said. And he told his story. Chris Dorner told his story, how he did everything right when he was in the military and subsequently everything else. This is before any of this shit happened. And then he said, which was the wildest thing, he said, I'm going to wage asymmetrical war on the L.A. Police Department and their families. What an ominous thing to say. And he did it. This motherfucker ambushed two police officers who were just sitting in their squad car, murdered them. He went to another police officer's house and killed his daughter. Boy, it was terrifying. And this motherfucker was on the run. He was doing it. I was supposed to do the Grammys. I was supposed to present at the Grammys that week. And a guy from the LAPD called me and said, Mr. Chappelle, we understand you're coming to Los Angeles. And I don't know if you know, but there is a lunatic on the streets who is killing police officers. And we would like to know if we can pick you up at the airport. We're extending this courtesy to everyone he mentioned in his manifesto. And I told the police, I'm fine. I read the manifesto. He likes me. Is there anything I can do for you, nigga? Because I'd be very worried. They found him. Big Bear. He was hiding in a cabin. When they figured out what this nigga was, no less than 400 police officers showed up and answered the call. And boy, let me tell you something. They Swiss cheese this nigga. He is dead as dead could be. He is done. And you know why 400 cops showed up? Because one of their own was murdered. So how the fuck can they understand what's going on in these streets? We saw ourselves like you see yourself. I'm the only one. LeBron James once said something about racism, and Laura Ingraham, which I will say publicly anywhere, anytime, is a cunt. Tell him I said it. Told one of Ohio's greatest residents ever, shut up and dribble. Tell you something about LeBron. This nigga was on the cover of Sports Illustrated when he was 17 years old and exceeded every expectation that they had for him. This business is treacherous. This is a good guy, LeBron. He's a family man and this, that, and the other. He didn't let anyone down. He didn't let anyone down. Came back to Ohio, won us a championship, and was like, I'm going to move to L.A. And everyone in Ohio was like, nigga, we understand. Good man, LeBron James. This bitch told my friend to shut up and dribble. My friend is the best at something, and this bitch is not the best at anything. She's a regular-ass white bitch with a platform. And I use the word bitch all the time because this is black. You watch one shooting after another. Eric Garner in New York, first guy that told the police, I can't breathe. Eric Garner was selling loose cigarettes in Staten Island. When my kid was born, my first son, my wife lived in Staten Island. It's an awful place. She knows that everyone who's ever been there knows it. Yuck to Staten Island. And my black ass will go there. And I got a lot of fans there and friends there. But this is a very terrible place. Fuck everybody in Staten Island except the Wu-Tang Clan. Got murdered by one police officer while five of his fellow officers watched him do it. Not one of them said, Frank, take it easy. None of that shit. Because they were being recorded. Because they were afraid if I correct my fellow officer on this camera, it's going to open us up for some kind of liability. And the guy killed the person that they were, what do you call it, apprehending? The guy was selling loose cigarettes. There goes Eric Garner. And then we have one after the other. Trayvon Martin gets murdered by just a regular nigga that George Zimmerman is nobody. George Zimmerman is an awful human being. He threatened Beyonce's life. He threatened Jay-Z's life. He signed Skittle bags because Trayvon Martin had Skittles on him when he was murdered by George Zimmerman. Boy, how do we feel? How do we feel right now? This kid was 15 years old being followed by a grown man with a gun and whooped his monkey ass. He beat the shit out of George Zimmerman, and George Zimmerman murdered him. We were very upset. This kid looked eerily like the president. He looked like my own children. I hate George Zimmerman. As an idea, not as a guy. I've never met him. I'm sure I would, though. Hit the streets. We got to marching. Dylann Roof. Dylann Roof killed 8 people in a church in Charleston, South Carolina. He prayed with them first, and then he shot them at point-blank range. Goes on and on. And then one weekend, a law-abiding citizen right here in Beaver Creek gets murdered. The cop that murdered John Crawford pulled me over the night before and let me off with a warning. And the next day, kills a kid. He says, drop the weapon, bang, bang, bang. This kid didn't even have enough time to register that he was the one being spoke to. This is our hometown. It happened right here. I was very proud to be your neighbor. I love the way you guys hit those streets. He said his name and tried to make sure everyone remembered him, but he got lost in the sauce. And this guy, John Crawford, was a saint. He was there buying shit so him and his kids could make s'mores. But Michael Brown got shot the same week, and Michael Brown became the story. And then, am I boring you? Well, then, right back in Minneapolis, there's Philando Castile, a law-abiding citizen who was a registered gun carrier who was trying to show the police the paperwork for his registered weapon and was murdered in front of his wife and his child. And then, right in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, just 2 days later, it happens again. And what do you think is going to happen? 3 days later, 9 cops get murdered in Dallas at a Black Lives Matter rally. Wow, I'll never forget it. It was the first time I ever thought, I got to get my family the fuck out of this place. These niggas will never understand. I'm tired of explaining to these people something that's so goddamn obvious. The guy that killed those 9 cops, just like Chris Dorner before him, was from our military. And then right after he did it, another 4 cops were shot dead in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Again, a black man that served in our military. What are they doing? Why would our guys do that? Black people from the military? Because they believe, just like they did when they were joining the fucking military, that they were fighting acts of terror. These are our people. These are our countrymen. If I were white and saw one of these men get murdered and I was in the NRA, why wouldn't I stand up for them? A card-carrying legal gun owner that gets murdered in cold blood because he's black. That's why they don't give a fuck. There's only one time the NRA ever supported an assault weapon ban. You know when it was? It was when the Black Panthers stormed the state capitol with assault rifles in California. Candace Owens, that rotten bitch. She's the worst. I can't think of a worse way to make money. She's the most articulate idiot I've ever seen in my fucking life. She's so articulate, she can tell you how fucking stupid she is precisely. And she told George Floyd's rap record on the internet, oh, he was this, he did that, and he's a drug addict, and he's not a hero, and why does the black community make him a hero? Why do you choose him as a hero? We didn't choose him, you did. They killed him, and that wasn't right. So he's the guy. We're not desperate for heroes in the black community. Any nigga that survives this nightmare is my goddamned hero. this is not funny at all. I got some pussy jokes, too, I could do, but I just really just... Slavery is a really wild concept. It's some weird shit. The night that those 9 police officers were killed felt like the end of the world. And the only reason that it wasn't the end of the world, in my opinion, is because at the very same time that was happening, Kobe Bryant was playing his last game as an L.A. Laker. And as scary as all that shit was, I kept flipping back to see if Kobe would drop 60. And he did. Oh, and he did. And vaguely in the back of my mind, I remember the idiot-ass bitch telling somebody to shut up and dribble. And I watched this nigga dribbling and saving this goddamn country from itself. I loved Kobe Bryant. He died the night, the day I won a Grammy. He died. That's why I didn't show up at the Grammys, because Kobe died. They had both of his fucking jersey numbers hanging up, 824. Well, that's my birthday. I cried like a baby. So here's what I said on Saturday Night Live that I got completely wrong. At the end of my set, I talked about how few black people were invited to the White House, how Frederick Douglass was the first, and that it didn't happen again till Roosevelt. But that was wrong. It happened one other time before that. Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson received a delegation of African Americans at the White House. They were from South Carolina. There was a man who was lynched for a $30 dispute at a grain elevator. And they killed him because the nigga was rich. And they hated him for being more wealthy than they were. And they murdered him. And the people in South Carolina said, fuck that. And they went via the governor of South Carolina. It was a black delegation that was facilitated to meet with Woodrow Wilson. That delegation was led by the AME Bishop, William David Chappelle. It's where I get my name. It was my great-grandfather, who was a slave when he was born. These things are not old. This is not a long time ago. It's today. It's today. That man's wife was the woman that my father called on his deathbed. And they were slaves. Are you out of your fucking mind if you can't see that? And these niggas say, why isn't David Chappelle saying anything? Because David Chappelle understands what the fuck he is seeing. And these streets will speak for themselves whether I'm alive or dead. I trust you guys. I love you guys. We'll keep this space open. This is the last stronghold for civil discourse. After this shit, it's just rat-a-tat, tat-a-tat, tat-tat-tat-tat. I love you very much. Thank you for being here. Good night.